County Board of Supervisors is now in session. Supervisor Harris, would you lead us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain.
Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we're grateful to be here today. We thank you for opportunity to be part of our government operation. And we thank you, Father, for all the items today that the board needs to discuss and make decisions on as they wrap up this year. Father, I just express our gratitude for the freedom of worship in this country, and it's maintained in our county. May this holiday season, may the Christmas opportunity create in each of us a desire to think about others, to express gratitude, to express joy, to express hope to those we greet and meet during this season. Thank you for all you do for us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Wendy, roll call, please. Real quick, the board will be convening today as County Service Area Number 3, County Service Area Number 4, and In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority, and receives no additional compensation. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Here.
Supervisor Help.
Present.
Supervisor Harris.
Present.
Supervisor Cobbsack.
Here.
And Supervisor Oker.
Present. Move on to item number 4, presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. Trish Barbieri and Kirk Hendricks, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Trish Barbieri, Director, Social Services Division. We are here this morning to provide caseload statistics for Social Services Division. This was a request made by the board during the government shutdown, and so we wanted to take our first opportunity at providing some stats to the board, and I have 7 copies here. Wendy. And I'd like to introduce Kirk Hendricks, who is our Deputy Director for Administrative Services, Social Services Division, and he will actually present those stats.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'll wait till they pass all the way around. All right, so in front of you, you have the caseload statistics for the Social Services Division. We have it split out by quarterly case count and the monthly average. I'll just go through the monthly average for each program. So for CalWORKs, we had an average of 441 cases with 1,110 people. And our monthly average cost was $457,306. For CalFresh, we had 5,581 cases with 9,158 people, totaling $1.6 million per month. And then for Medi-Cal, we had 9,078 cases with 16,289 people. We don't have costs for that, as that is handled on the state side. For general assistance, we have 37 cases. And for GA, it's one person per case. We had 37 people and $12,130 per month. Foster care, we had 92 cases. Same thing, 92 people. And we had $194,978 per month. Adult Protective Services, we have 48 cases, 48 people. We don't have cost for that as we don't provide services. We provide services, but not direct services. IHSS, we have 518 cases, which is 518 people, totaling $742,910. We have no CMSP cases. We have 4 public guardian cases and 4 public conservator cases. Next, I'll talk about new cases. So this is new cases that were approved during the quarter. CalWORKS, we averaged 28 cases approved per month. CalFresh was 284 cases per month. Medi-Cal was 150 cases per month. General Assistance was 4 per month. Foster care was 4 per month. Child abuse reports, we received 57 per month. IHSS was 10 per month. APS, which is Adult Protective Services, was 63 per month, and then 0 for CMSP. Next, we'll talk about fraud referrals. These are the referrals we got each for the quarter for fraud. For early fraud, we received 4 for CalFresh and 2 for CalWORKS. Ongoing fraud, we had 79 for CalFresh, 44 for CalWORKS. For trafficking, we had 1 for CalFresh. CalWORKS is not tracked in our system. And then we had no prosecutions or convictions. Questions or anything?
Yeah, real quick, on the ongoing fraud, is that typically they take an advantage of the system? And so what happens if they may not be prosecuted, but do they get out of the system?
Great question. Thank you, Supervisor Valenzuela. Fraud looks different. There's so, Trish Barbieri, sorry, Social Services Division Director. Fraud has many different faces, and so when they receive the fraud referral, it could be trafficking, selling benefits, it could be perjury, it could be falsification of record. I mean, it's so many different faces. There's two avenues. We can proceed with prosecution through the district attorney, or we can proceed with just internal process. We have an administrative disqualification hearing process that clients are subject to, and they may not be prosecuted during that, but they would receive a period of time where they're ineligible to benefits if they are deemed guilty of those, charges, allegations.
And then the other question I have is regarding CalFresh. It just seems like the numbers are excessive for our county. Is that typical for rural California with your peers, do you know?
I think it is typical for rural California, but I also know that in Siskiyou County, being a small county, yeah. What the state does is they have three different sizes of counties, small, medium, and large. And typically small counties fall into the small category. And just within the last year, based on these increased numbers, and it is significantly, mm-hmm. has significantly increased over the last several years, we were moved to a medium-sized status. Mm-hmm. So we have caseloads equivalent to medium-sized counties. So the numbers have gone up.
Okay, thank you.
Immensely, thank you, great questions. I did want to add also, under the first area there, we missed public administrator. And so we'll be adding public administrator to the chart as well. Currently, we have one active public administrator case, and we missed general assistance in the fraud section. We also, every single general assistance application, which is a county program, is referred for potential fraud, just for a review to ensure people reside here, that they live where they tell us that they live. So every general assistance application is referred to fraud, and so we want to refer. We want to recognize that on our chart as well. Last thing, if you have any suggestions or information that is missing that you would like, you can either reach out to me or Kirk, and we will make those changes. Like I said, this is our first attempt at providing you some statistics with regard to social services programs. I don't know if we have any additional questions.
I have two. first one, yes, additional things. I like to see trends and not just a snapshot in time. I want to know whether we're effective or not, or in what direction we're headed. And then, because I don't know, could you explain to me what falls into Adult Protective Services versus what IHSS does?
Absolutely. Great question. IHSS is a benefit of Medi-Cal recipients, and so the IHSS program focuses on keeping individuals in their home who need some sort of care and support. Without that care and support, they would be in a convalescent or assisted living facility. So it's just really a benefit of the Medi-Cal program. Adult Protective Services is a protective services program for vulnerable adults, abused adults, and it's very similar to Child Welfare Services. Doesn't have the teeth that Child Welfare has, but it's a protective services program.
Are those determined by you, or has the court gone through some procedure to put people in that category?
For Adult Protective Services? Yeah. We do work with the district attorney's office to prosecute cases, but we do have guidelines that the state provides us in terms of categorizing whether or not abuse has occurred.
I'm just trying to figure out how somebody gets into that category.
Adult Protective Services is a, trying to find the right word, my apologies, is a complex program. Adults have the right to live how they choose, as long as it isn't harming them. And oftentimes we get referrals for individuals because they live differently maybe than you and I. Maybe they live in a hoarding situation, or they don't shower every day, or you know, they have an abundance of cats or things like that. And so things that may not be the standard to their neighbor, It isn't really a violation, and it isn't oftentimes something that we can intervene in.
I don't want to belabor this too much, but I'm trying to determine. I'm often confronted by the public about, you know, so and so is supposed to be taking care of somebody, and they're not. So some of these people fall into like a neglect category and end up in that designation versus IHSS?
Yeah, and so when we go out on our APS referrals, if we determine that we can't intervene, basically we have the responsibility to connect them to services and supports, and one of those supports may be in-home supportive services care.
Okay.
And so we will try to connect them with somebody who can provide them care, but truthfully at the end of the day, it's their decision whether or not they accept the services and whether or not they accept the supports.
And is there a complaint process or something I can point people to?
They can call our front line, 841-4200, and we have 24-hour coverage available, a hotline available, to receive any calls with regard to adult protective and even child welfare.
Okay, thank you.
It's the same line.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any other comments in the room? Do we have any comments online?
Trying not online.
Thank you. Moving on to item 5, consent agenda. Do we need to pull any items other than C?
5C yes. Is all I heard.
Okay.
5I.
And I?
5I, you said?
I.
Thank you.
Start with Haley.
Good morning, Haley Hudson, Deputy County Administrator. I had this item pulled because of a language change after the posting of the agenda. I have provided the board with the updated language and an updated resolution for signature.
Is the updated info in what we just signed?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So
motion to approve with the change.
Second.
Go ahead.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
That's
yes.
With everything minus I, correct? Or is we just going to do C?
Oh, I just did C.
I think this was just for C.
C, yes.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobstead?
Aye.
And Supervisor Oker?
Aye.
So do we want to do the rest of the consent agenda now?
Minus I.
Minus I.
Second.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobstead?
Aye.
Supervisor Oker?
Aye. Thank you. Moving on to item I.
So this was up last week. I was not here. Is this a continuation or what's transpiring, I guess, first off?
It was on Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services. It was on the agenda last week. It was my understanding from Shelley that there were language changes as required, but Dawn may have additional information. And so it was pulled and brought back.
I clarify real quick. It was one of the two that were dropped from the agenda.
So
it was not continued.
Okay, okay. That's, and then secondly, in the grant summary, the staffing is like 1.1 million out of this 1.6. What are the services, contract services and supplies? It's kind of minimal, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out. There's a huge amount going to staffing. What does that entail?
The funds that aren't directed towards staffing?
No, the ones that are.
Okay. So my understanding, there are three positions that will be providing supportive services to parents.
Over 3 years?
Yes, over the 3 years.
And those positions will administer what?
So it's parenting, it's support for parents of newborns, and so it's support around all kinds of parenting issues, referring new moms to services, supportive services, and, you know, visiting in-home and providing support.
Okay.
It's an existing program that's continuing.
All right. The 3 years helps. All right, thank you. Move to approve.
Second.
All right, Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Supervisor Ober?
Aye.
Thank you.
Good. Moving on to departmental requests. 6A, County Library. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Teresa Johnson, County Librarian. And I'll be speaking about the library. Deborah Davis will be speaking about our literacy program through the library. And Vicki Driver will be talking about the YRECA Friends of the Library. So, and I also want to introduce my tech services staff, Bill Corbett and Deb Perdue. The library's budget for the 2024-25 fiscal year was $675,723, and this year it's $674,426. So I'm going to get you that information. The county, the Siskiyou County Library proudly participated in the Siskiyou Golden Fair from August 6th to the 10th of this year. We were deeply grateful to be allotted a 20 by 30 exhibit space generously donated by the Siskiyou Golden Fairgrounds. Our exhibit featured an informational booth, a children's activity area, a podium for local author talks, and an extensive historical display. Each of our 12 libraries were represented by dedicated Friends of the Library volunteers who signed up on shifts to staff the booth throughout the week. I hope that you guys were able to catch some of that. It was pretty cool. Throughout the fair, we hosted live recordings to broadcast the day's events and highlights. The historical display was the result of months of research showcasing over 110 years of library history, including the origins and growth of both the County Library and the Carnegie Library. Beautifully designed timeline posters were printed and generously donated by Cliff Munson from the Siskiyou Golden Library Fair. The Happy Camp Library was awarded a grant from the Community Foundation of the North State to put in new flooring, paint, upgrade their wiring and lighting, and replace most of their shelving. All of the work has been completed, and it's open again. And the Tule Lake Library was closed, from November 18th until December 5th while they worked on remodeling their library. Leslie Tharp, the branch manager of the Etna and Fort Jones Libraries, spearheaded a fire emergency assembly at the Scott Valley Junior High School in October. The Scott Valley Fire Department, CAL FIRE, Search and Rescue, and the Siskiyou County Office of Emergency Services presented there, along with a few of their engines, and it was very successful. We attended the Siskiyou County Museum Family Fun Day at the end of September and the Fort Jones Fall Festival in October. The 18th Read Across Siskiyou was held last month throughout Siskiyou County. It was sponsored by the Siskiyou County Library and First Five Siskiyou. Volunteer readers visited libraries, preschools, and child care centers, transitional kindergarten, and kindergarten classes to read the book of the Hubosaurus. I read the book to two classes at the Karuk Preschool in Wairika, and each child was given a copy to take home. The California legislature feels it is important for children to have a library card, so they created legislation to that effect for public schools. They call it the Student Success Card Program. They want all school kids to have equal access to all we have to offer, including physical and online materials and homework help. Some schools in our county don't have school libraries. Teachers can help students in their classrooms to use their cards to access online materials. Same for parents at home for assignments. I am working with the Siskiyou County Office of Education to get this program started. And Deborah Davis will now speak to you about our literacy program.
My name is Deborah Davis, and I'm the literacy coordinator for the Siskiyou County Libraries. The Siskiyou County Literacy Program is a grant provided by the state of California and is separate from the regular county library. I would like to start by letting you know that 38% of this county reads below fourth or fifth grade level. And it is often difficult to reach these people. The library can be a safe and private place to meet for one-on-one tutoring, if you can get them. So we have three different sections. The adult literacy, and I think you have information there that shows you some of the things we offer with our flyers and so forth. And then we have family literacy, which includes parents and children. And then we have our 0 to 5 story time. And that we're now collaborating with First Five. So they come in and help do that. But our program has recently lost $20,000 for the family literacy program for this fiscal year. So we are now accepting donations to cover picture books for our 0 to 5 family program. And I think you have the flyers. Our program is explicitly targeted towards low literate populations. And then I've provided the flyers for the adult program and the family program, along with more information about the Siskiyou County Literacy Program. I think you have that there. Any questions?
My name is Vicki Driver. I am the representative for the Friends of the Wairika Library. We are a group of volunteers that operate the front of the house. These are our roommates here, the county people.
In the back room.
Yeah, in the back room. And they only have 3 people, so honestly, we try to support them wherever we can in whatever little ways we can. And they take good care of us. Our 20 volunteers work, if you paid us at $20 an hour, and I recalculated our number of hours, and at $20 an hour, about $25,000 of free labor a quarter. Think about that. That's $100,000 a year that you guys don't have to pay for. So we do a lot of things besides running the library. We do some fundraising. Teresa and I do grant writing to provide cover the shortfalls for other places. We provide a lot of assistance to the large number of illiterate and semi-literate people who come in because so many services have been cut back in person. They are now only digital. So you take someone who cannot read very well, who does not have a computer, doesn't know how to operate one, doesn't live someplace where a computer access is affordable, and it's a real problem. We spend a lot of time helping people with forms and things like that. Let's see, other good things that we do besides the grant writing, we see about 120 people a day. And now, if you look up there, you may not realize looking at those numbers, but it means that 2/3 of our checkouts are now digital, audio, and on your favorite device. And we do need volunteers. Our volunteers are aging out. We've had several retirees who retired at 90, and they're still kicking. So we'd also like to thank IT department for their wonderful support. We have 14 public computers in the library, and they keep us up and running. The digital divide here, as I often say, it's like the Grand Canyon. It's not a divide, it's the Grand Canyon. So we need a lot of help keeping the system running and helping people use it. We have free computers and Wi-Fi. We have the cheapest copy rate in town, 20 cents a page. And let's see, we help support Deborah with her literacy program. We promote it every way we can. Every Wednesday, we have 20 toddlers and preschoolers, preschoolers running around doing all their fun activities. That is a great thing. We are proud to be a partner in helping them with their starting their learning journey. And we also have a summer reading program between adults and children, mostly children. We have about 200 participants. Those prizes and free ice cream coupons really incentivize a lot of people, but it helps them keep up their literacy rate, which for many kids really declines in the summer when they do nothing but sit there and play games. We also, relating to the kids, we also provide scholarships for high school students. The volunteers provide the money for that. We also provide financial support to the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which helps with the literacy program, and we provide financial support to First Five, and there is a local sorority that is the sort of the assistant to these programs. We provide some financial support to them. Okay, let's see. We are also a warming and cooling and smoke-free shelter during the heat and the cold and the smoky times. You know, we originally thought it would mostly be homeless people taking advantage of it. It is not. It is senior citizens who, you know, really either they don't have air conditioning or they can't afford to run their air conditioning and heating as much as they need to. Even though there are assistance programs, it's just not quite enough. And a lot of our seniors come in every day. We get kind of concerned if we see any of them missing. So our logo is Strong Libraries Build Strong Communities, and we truly believe that, and we see it every day in the people who come in and visit us asking for help. So I'm going to turn it over back over to you two for questions.
Are there any questions?
I don't know about a question, but I'll tell you a comment. I was, you mentioned 38% was the figure. That is astounding to me.
Yes.
I mean, I just, I can't think of why some of the triggers, why we're so low up on the socioeconomic scale in Siskiyou County. 38% is probably the point person for that. Mm-hmm. So
it
thank
is.
You for all you do.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you. I was in about a month ago and chatted with you ladies and spent some time with you. You do an amazing job. I feel a little sad that you don't get more volunteers to help you. You work tirelessly and do a fantastic job for our community, and it's just amazing to see how enthusiastic the children are when they come in and how much they love to be there and learn and read, and I can't thank you enough for the job that you do. Don't stop. Please don't stop. So thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy.
Moving on to item B, Health and Human Services, Medicare, CalFresh, Medi-Cal, Mission. Good morning again.
Good morning again, Madam Chair, members of the board, Trish Barbieri, Director of Social Services Division. Today, we are here to present on upcoming changes to the Medi-Cal and CalFresh programs. At the federal level, they're referred to as Medicaid and SNAP. We did have some updated slides for you. We found one little piece of information that was missing that we added this morning, and I believe Wendy passed out the updated slides. Corey Watson, Deputy Director for Social Services Division, will present on the changes.
Good morning. Corey Watson, Deputy Director of Social Services. And I'm going to just go through the PowerPoint with you guys this morning. Before I get started, I'm going to give a disclaimer that the information presented is very fluid. We are governed by the Department of Healthcare Services for Medi-Cal, Medicaid, and the California Department of Social Services for CalFresh. We are provided very limited information. As you guys know, with many programs, it feels like they put the cart before the horse, and then it's a lot of last-minute information, and so we scramble with a lot of things. And so I will try to answer questions and give as much information as I can, and I'm providing as much updated information as I can within this. Trish provided some information that I had in here that she had updated information that she received yesterday. So I'm going to correct that as we move through this as best I can. Okay, so these are program changes to the Medi-Cal and CalFresh. Most of them I've kind of lumped it together through HR 1. Some of them are budget changes that we anticipated prior to HR 1, but through the news and the media, it's been all lumped together through the HR 1 big, beautiful tax bill. So for Medi-Cal members, eligibility and benefits will stay the same mostly, but there are some changes that will happen. They will continue to have access through doctor visits, hospital stays, and emergency care prescription, drugs, mental health and substance disorder treatment, preventative services like screenings, vision, transportation when needed, and coverage including dental and vision care, as well as other benefits that support healthcare and well-being. Next slide, please. So one of the big changes that you guys have probably read about or heard in the news is asset limits. So this goes through the details of that. This is one of the changes that will occur January 1st, 2026. When members apply for or renew Medi-Cal, our eligibility workers that are assigned the cases will look at what they own. This is called an asset check. We used to do this in eligibility, and it went away. Now it's coming back. We call this an asset check. So this applies to Medi-Cal members who are age 65 and older and meet the household income limit for Medi-Cal. This applies to disabled individuals who are either physical, mental, or developmentally disabled, living in a nursing home, living in a family that makes too much money to qualify under federal tax rules. It's important to know that that most members can own is $130,000 for one person. So that's a pretty high amount of money, so it's not a low amount. And then for every individual that lives in the home, you can add additional $65,000 for every additional household member. Assets that count include bank accounts, cash, and then more than one house or vehicle. Assets that don't count towards that is the home a member lives in, one vehicle, household items, and some savings like retirement accounts. The enrollment freeze, that will occur January 1st, 2026. Some adults will no longer be able to sign up for full scope Medi-Cal coverage based on their immigration status. This applies to Medi-Cal members who are undocumented individuals. If they live in the U.S. without legal permission or are lawfully present immigrants who are 19 or older and not pregnant. That is a key word, not pregnant. It's important to know if individuals are already Medi-Cal members, they can stay covered regardless of their immigration status. To keep Medi-Cal, members must fill out and renew forms every year, meet Medi-Cal rules like income and living in California. If Medi-Cal discontinues, members will have 90 days to fix the problem and keep coverage. If not fixed in the 90-day window, individuals will not be able to get full-scope Medi-Cal again. They can only apply for restricted Medi-Cal, which covers emergency care, pregnancy-related care, nursing home care, and then individuals can still get full-scope Medi-Cal if they are children under 19, pregnant individuals, and the pregnancy coverage lasts the entire pregnancy and up to 1 year after it ends. Applicants must still meet Medi-Cal rules like income and living in California. Dental coverage starting July 1st, 2026. Some Medi-Cal members will stop getting full scope dental services as part of their coverage due to changes in state law. This applies to Medi-Cal members who are age 19 and older and are not pregnant or postpartum and are lawfully present immigrants who have had a green card for less than 5 years and are exempt from the 5-year waiting period, are classified as PRUCOL, permanent residents under color of law, qualify through a state-funded expansion or humanitarian program for victim of trafficking or crime, and have another immigration status that does not qualify for full-scope Medi-Cal under federal rules. The immigration status changes. Starting October 1st, 2026, the federal government will change how it classifies some immigration statuses, legal standing in the U.S. based on how and why individuals immigrated here. Some immigration status will be considered unsatisfactory. So we're calling this UIS now, unsatisfactory immigration status, meaning they will no longer qualify for full scope Medi-Cal under federal rules. Californians may still get full scope Medi-Cal that covers all regular Medi-Cal services, not just emergency, which is paid by the state of California. However, Medi-Cal will no longer get non-emergency dental care. Individuals that this applies to are refugees or asylee, someone who fled from their home country for safety and don't yet have a green card, a humanitarian parolee, someone who allowed in the U.S. for urgent reasons for at least 1 year, and a survivor of domestic violence or human trafficking and has a pending status. So this is the new definition. And then the monthly premiums, this will start July 1st, 2027. Some Medi-Cal members will need to pay a small monthly fee premium to keep their full scope Medi-Cal. This will apply to Californians who are between the ages of 19 and 59 and who are not pregnant and are lawfully present immigrants and have had a green card for less than 5 years and do not qualify for an exemption. The exemptions are very complex. I did not put them all on here. I'm more than happy to email them to you guys or email you the link where you can find that information because it's a lot of information. Are classified as PRUCOL, qualify through a state-funded and humanitarian program, have another immigration status that does not qualify for full Medi-Cal under federal rules. And it's important to know if members this applies to do not pay, their Medi-Cal will change. They will only get restricted Medi-Cal, which covers emergency care, pregnancy-related care, and nursing home care. The work rules. So this will start January 1st, 2027. some adults will need to work or volunteer to keep their Medi-Cal. This applies to Medi-Cal members who are people applying for Medi-Cal who are 19 to 64 years old. This again has many exemptions that will take many slides to go over. It's very complex. It's complex in that we can't be ineligibility workers. The state really mandates that we evaluate people for exemptions and really make sure that we're determining if they meet exemptions. It's important that we know that members must do one or more of the following. Earn at least $580 a month. Trish got updated information that it's $580 a month. It doesn't have to be from working. It could be from any other source. Be a seasonal worker, someone who only works during a certain time of the year and makes an average of $580 a month over the last 6 months. Be in a job training program for at least 80 hours per month. Volunteer or do community service for at least 80 hours per month. This should be organized and something a member can prove they completed with a letter or a form. Go to school at least half time. This usually means taking two or three classes or about 6 to 8 credits each semester, and do a mix of things listed above for a total of or at least 80 hours per month. In this, I want you to think about those questions around fraud too, and the increase that it's going to take our workers to ensure that these aren't fraudulent documents, and the increase in fraud referrals to our contracted DA investigators, because we do get fraudulent documents now, and there could be an increase in those documents that we receive, and that we're really gonna have to ensure that people are not giving us fraudulent things to be a recipient of Medi-Cal. So 6 month eligibility checks and retro coverage. Right now we only do annual reviews, and now we're going to have to do 6 month eligibility checks, which is going to be double the work, really. So starting January 1st, 2027, some Medi-Cal members will have their eligibility check twice a year instead of once. This will apply to members aged 19 to 64 and individuals that don't have children younger than age 19. It's important that members will be asked to renew their Medi-Cal every 6 months, and they could lose their coverage if they do not fill out the forms completely and turn them in on time. Starting January 1st, 2027, Medi-Cal will pay for fewer months of Medi-Cal bills from before application date. Medi-Cal members who enroll January 1st, 2027 or after, aged 19 to 64, who don't have children younger than 19. So right now, if someone submits an application, we can retro and pay back 90 days. This will change it that it can only go back 60 days from the date of application, if that retro comes. So that is what that's talking about. The co-payments. So starting October 1st, 2028, some adults on Medi-Cal may have to pay a small fee, and certain healthcare services, the Department of Healthcare Services will provide more information as it becomes available. So this is gonna apply to individuals 19 to 64 years old, that are not pregnant, are not on Medicare, and make more than $15,560 a year. It's important to know that members might have to pay a small fee for some healthcare, like seeing a specialist and getting certain treatments or tests. Members will not pay more than 5% of their household income in co-payments each year. Members won't have to pay for services at community health centers or rural clinics, emergency care, regular checkups, prenatal care and pediatric care, mental health, substance use disorder treatment. So that covers the Medi-Cal pieces that we know at this time. So now we're going to move into CalFresh, known as SNAP at the federal level. We know more from the Department of Healthcare Services than we know from the California Department of Social Services. So CalSAWS is the statewide system that we use at this time. It's a new system that they migrated to, 4 or 5 years ago. And so there is a lot of things that they're saying that until federal guidance is released or until automation is allowed in the system, because we can't do things manually. It's just unrealistic for the workforce. And so what we have been told by the California Department of Social Services is that California is awaiting federal guidance and automation in its statewide system prior to implementation of any changes outlined in the next few slides. So re-evaluation of the Thrifty Food Plan. Basically what the HR 1 stated is that this will happen no earlier than October 1st, 2027. What happens when they re-evaluate the Thrifty Food Plan is this basically gives a COLA to individuals who are on CalFresh benefits, and it increases the food benefits that they receive. So this is saying that will not occur any earlier than October 1st, 2027, and nobody on CalFresh benefits will have an increase. ABOD, that's what we call it. So able-bodied adults without dependents. Starting as early as November 1st, 2025, some CalFresh recipients will have to meet participation requirements to receive CalFresh benefits for more than 3 months out of a 36-month period. This will apply to 18 to 64-year-olds that are able-bodied without a dependent child under the age of 14. Historically, California has been under a waiver for this. We are not under a waiver. That waiver was rescinded, and technically the state of California should have, there's a typo in there, don't look too close, should have gone live with it November 1st, 2025, but the California Department of Social Services has not given us any direction on how to implement it. The other thing to keep in mind is that there are three counties in the state of California, Colusa, Imperial, and Tulare County, that they have a unemployment rate over 10% during the 12-month period of July to June 2025. So they will maintain under a waiver, and they will not have to do ABOD. So when California gives us direction, we will have to basically create a plan with that large number of CalFresh recipients. We currently have 3,013 individuals that we will have to create that plan and ensure that they are doing some work requirements to maintain CalFresh in Siskiyou. Matching funds requirement. This establishes that effective federal fiscal year 2028, so October 1st, 2027, state agencies will be required to pay at least a percentage of CalFresh benefit allotments if they have a payment error rate, we're calling that the PER, above 6.0%. Of note, this language does not alter existing PER liability and financial penalty requirements of state agencies. Currently, the California PER is 11.7%. We do not know the direct financial impact on Siskiyou County SSD funding or share of costs regarding the state penalty, but we do know that there will be some responsibility to all 58 counties in California. CDSS has not provided any direct information or direction regarding this. Administrative cost sharing, so starting federal fiscal year 2027, October 1st, 2026, And each year thereafter, the federal portion of administrative costs will be reduced from 50% to 25%, thus increasing the state share of administrative costs from 50 to 75%. In California, the state share of administrative cost is split between the state and the counties at a rate of 70% state and 30% counties. This split remains in place and applies to the new administrative cost sharing formula. Therefore, this will increase the CalFresh administrative costs in Siskiyou County by approximately $1.3 million. Further questions can be answered by Deputy Director Kirk Hendricks. I brought him along. CDSS has provided some information. There's still a lot of unknown. Kirk's run a lot of numbers. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like. There's a lot of scary stuff going on. And then non-citizen eligibility for CalFresh. So this limits SNAP CalFresh eligibility to an individual who resides in the United States and is a U.S. citizen, lawful permanent resident, Cuban or Haitian entrants, or an individual who resides in the U.S. in accordance with Compacts of Free Association, a COFA agreement. Anyone have questions? It's a lot of information and it changes. I'm sure there's like questions for Kirk because the money thing usually keeps coming up.
So, where's your help?
Mr. Hendricks.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions.
Okay.
Hey, good morning. Going back to, I think it's the second slide or so, under assets.
Yes.
A lot of families that are Medi-Cal because they are land rich and income poor. How is land treated as an asset?
If it's an asset that is available to the household or to the family, then it would be considered. Although there are a lot of exemptions that we did not include in this slide, in this presentation today, if an asset is tied to employment, self-employment, then it is not considered. Okay. But there are a lot of rules in place that we have to adhere to in terms of evaluating whether or not we would consider it.
Great question. Land held in trust or it's part of a large ranching operation or something that's not liquidable.
Right.
So
we look at property as to whether or not it's, I just lost it, accessible or not inaccessible. So if it's something that they can convert to cash easily, then that would be considered property. If they can't easily convert it to cash, then it's something that would be considered exempt.
Okay. I guess that needs some liquidity definition then. Then I had another, just from experience, I'm curious about how you might track this. When I was teaching at COS, frequently I'd have sometimes up to half my class on some form of assistance, and they would meet this requirement of being enrolled for 6 to 8 units. Their payments would go out at the beginning of the month, and they would fail to complete the rest of the course in December, and I'd have to fail them, so they really were not making progress. They were just using it as a cash incentive, if you will. Does the department track progress towards one's education, or is that in law, or is that just overlooked?
So it really depends where they're getting assistance from. Right, and that's going to look different when we move towards implementation of ABOD. That stuff will have to be tracked for CalFresh if they're receiving assistance through CalFresh, and if they're receiving assistance through Welfare to Work, through their own case or through their parents' case, that definitely is tracked, and they do go into sanction and those kinds of things, and it is going to tighten up for CalFresh with the ABOD rules. CalFresh has been I'm just going to be kind of transparent. The rules around CalFresh have not been very tight. They aren't. It's food assistance. We have a lot of food insecurity in the state of California. And the rules are very loose. And we don't make the rules. We just follow them. And so the federal government has put some things into place that are going to tighten them to a certain degree. But California is going to keep them loose as much as possible. So I think that there's going to be some push and pull, and we're going to have to make some changes to what the eligibility looks around that, and AVOD will change some of that.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I'm from a taxpayer standpoint, because the 4 years that I taught there, it was a group of repeat offenders every semester.
I can add just a little bit more too. As Corey mentioned, I was at a training academy last week, and so they did provide some updated information. And it really is contingent on the program that they're receiving. Some of the programs are very tight in terms of monthly participation. Like, we have to go in and ensure that they're doing what they said they were going to do. We agree to a plan. We, the county, the client, we agree to a plan. And they have to adhere to that. And every month they have to provide us proof. But that's not applicable to all programs.
Yeah, it just seems that the taxpayers are going to provide an incentive that ought to be leading toward someone's personal enrichment and being able to someday support themselves, not just a way to gain from the system.
Correct.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
You know, I'd be curious, somewhere down the line, the numbers, who affects the Siskiyou County. You know, if we're talking about thousands, that's one thing. If we're talking about dozens, that's another. Right. So maybe moving forward, we can kind of somewhat track that. Thank you.
Yes. And I'll just add one last thing. We, of course, have been tossing around numbers and working closely with our fiscal team to determine financial impact, so that we can prepare for these changes. And right now, what we have preliminarily determined is that the increase in workload is going to require an additional 8 eligibility workers to be able to do the work. That's assuming that there are no additional changes in the law. There are a lot of lawsuits that are out there right now, and so assuming that there are no changes to the law, at minimum we're looking at an additional 8 staff. And so obviously when these changes come into effect, we would definitely be coming back to the board to ask for additional positions and support in that area.
And if I could just give one final comment. I was at this annual meeting for the State Association of Counties, and they did have a presentation before the State Association Health and Human Services Policy Committee meeting. The director of California Department of Health Services, Michelle Boss, it's everything's in a state of flux. I mean, I think it's a moving target at this point, so there's more to come with this.
It is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. At this point, in the interest of getting our state employee back to work, we will recess as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors and convene and look at item number 8 as the County Service Area 4 and go to public comment, item 8. Is there any in the room? Any online?
I'm showing none online.
Go to item B, consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Director Valenzuela?
Yes.
Director Haupt?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
Director Kobsett?
Aye.
And Director Oprah?
Aye. Okay, that will adjourn and reconvene as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors and go back to department request.
Thank you.
Item C, you're welcome. Item C, County Administration, and we will consider the re-employment agreement with Mr. Horace Dean Morgan as our County Counsel.
Good morning, Chair Ogren, members of the Board, Angela Davis, County Administrator. Before you today is an employment agreement for the appointment of Mr. Horace Dean. Morgan in the position of County Counsel. The employment agreement is for a 4-year term beginning January 4th, 2026 through January 3rd of 2030 at the annual salary amount of $264,600.50. And I am seeking your approval of the employment agreement as well as signature and the appointment of Mr. Morgan to the position. Mr. Morgan, I would like to, first of all, it's my honor, my privilege to be able to introduce to some and present to others. Mr. Morgan, if you would like to come up, and I want to thank him. He left court to come over here this morning to be with us in person. And I believe that the board may have some questions or comments. So at this time, I would like to introduce Mr. Morgan and open it up to the board for discussion or questions.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to see you again. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer those for you.
Supervisor Howe?
I got a couple. A Nittany Lion, I'm impressed.
This year, maybe not so much.
As a lifelong Pennsylvanian fan,
I'm starting to think I might switch my allegiance. See where we go here.
Which campus?
Actually, went to law school at Penn State, which would be Penn State Dickinson School of Law. It's located in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. I grew up pretty close to that.
My son's a Penn State graduate recently with a degree in sports journalism. He also has some allegiance issues right now. I had the pleasure of taking him to an Oregon Ducks versus Indiana game, and I think he's leaning towards Oregon now. So I know. I'm going to try to get him in line.
You got to get him back for Thanksgiving next year, or no?
I am definitely working towards getting him back in line. So.
All right. I did have a more serious question.
That one wasn't serious.
Well, maybe not for everybody else in the room, but my district has a great deal of federal land, and typically when we have council, it's mostly centered around state law. What's your experience with the federal agencies and federal law?
With federal agencies, not a lot of experience with respect to those, with the exception of certain regulations that apply to food regulations and more, let's just say, urban respects of land use and things of that nature. Primarily federal food regulations. So.
Okay. Right. My district, as you probably well know, deals a lot with federal ESA, federal timber issues associated with that, and because like the rest of the county, it's about 65% of my district, I think, is around 87% public land, and it interfaces all my communities, and there's often conflict.
It's certainly something that will require a little bit of learning on my part, but it's certainly something I can do. One of the things you may not be aware of is I'm licensed in 6 states. I know a lot about a lot of different law. And it's just something where I need to study up, make sure that I'm on track, and I believe that there's a very experienced team of individuals there at the office that are going to be helpful to that.
Okay. Are you pursuing any licensing in federal court?
I am currently licensed in the Central District of California. I will be looking at the Eastern District, obviously, to ensure that I can, if necessary, litigate there. I am licensed in multiple district courts throughout the United States, including Southern District of Texas, Middle District, and Eastern District of Pennsylvania. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of my licenses, but a lot of federal district courts, and certainly with this position, I'll seek admission into the Eastern District.
That'd be great. We end up in the Eastern District with an awful lot of issues in this county. I'd appreciate that.
So.
So, good morning. I assume that you've been at least following some of the issues that we have at this board level with regard to water, fish, and forestry. And if you want to comment on any of that, that would be helpful.
I am following this, but out of respect to current county council, I don't wish to provide any opinions with respect to this.
I'm not looking for opinion, but mainly just that, you know, you... you understand kind of what we've been up against.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And one of the things about this particular position, there is a diverse group of legal issues that affect the county. Mm-hmm. And so I'm following, I'm learning, but I also make sure that I do my job as a member of the district attorney's office as well, and there's only so many hours in the day. But I certainly am aware of them, and I'm studying as things come up.
Thank you.
Just real quick, I have a personal contact, so we're going to share some information with you, and so I want to get your email and your contact information.
Sure, you need me to put that on record now? Oh, yeah, we can certainly do that. One of my...
I don't like a paper trail, an email trail. I don't want any of that with a lawyer.
You know, that's probably not what you want to say to your lawyer.
That's a known fact for me.
But here's the thing. One of my first goals, primary goals, I shouldn't say goal, it's intent is to meet with each and every one of you individually to discuss your individual needs as well as with department heads and other critical individuals in the county. It's very important for me to learn not only what's going on, but who's involved and
sure.
your opinions with respect to those things.
For me, it's going to be just, and I hate to interrupt, I was down at the State Association of Counties. I'm very involved at that level. So just a contact there, I think, can be beneficial for us.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. We can certainly do that.
Okay, anything else?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Ready. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Hout?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
And Supervisor Cobsett?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
I was worried about that. Thank you very much. I am excited about this opportunity. I'm looking forward to serve the board as well as the county, and I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item D, discussion direction and possible action to appoint Mr. Garrett Richardson to the position of Director of Public Works.
Yes, County Administrator Angela Davis. This item is a recommendation to appoint Mr. Garrett Richardson to the Director of Public Works position. And the effective date has been changed to today, so that is December 9, 2025. And I am pleased to present him to you and introduce to others Mr. Garrett Richardson. For any questions, comments from the board or from Mr. Richardson.
Excited to have you stepping up even further in your employment here with the county, and I'm excited to see what you're going to be able to do at the department. And whatever, for me personally, whatever you need, I'm more than willing to help you from where I stand to develop this department into a successful system. And I think you're built for this, and I'm really excited to watch you move through this as you gain some time in that seat. So you have my support.
Appreciate it.
Anyone
else? Good job so far.
Motion to approve.
Second, but real quick, just a comment. I've had a couple opportunities to interact with Mr. Richardson down in South County, so I look forward to taking it over. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Look forward to it.
Okay, call for a vote.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Howell?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye. Thank you, sir.
So the county website will get updated now?
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
You're supposed to say yes to that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not his, it's on us.
It's on us,
it is on
yes.
Us.
I need to get that changed now. Yes.
Okay, moving on to item E, and that is to appoint Ms. Haley Lang to the position of Director of Community Development.
County Administrator Angela Davis. Where was the applause on the other side? It is my honor and pleasure to introduce to some and present to others Ms. Haley Lang. She was the successful candidate in the recruitment of the Director of Community Development. Her appointment would be effective December 30, 2025. And I open it to the board for any questions, discussions, and as well as Ms. Lang if she has anything that she would like to say.
Any Are you sure?
Valid question, but yes.
No, I was going to say, I don't, I've enjoyed working with you. I support you. It's great.
Thank you.
Supervisor Harris?
As much as we'll miss Rick, I'm excited to see you stepping into a new role as well. You've been a rock star in your current position, so I have nothing but hope and praise for you moving forward. And same thing, any way that I can support you in your new role, please let me know.
Thank you.
That's good. Okay. So real quick, again, being back down in San Jose for the state annual conference there is a capacity issue amongst all our peers looking for people to step up into roles. So I feel very fortunate that we have three appointments today. Ms. Lang, we've had conversation more than once, so thank you for taking the role.
Yeah.
So I look forward to it, and with that, I'd like to make the motion to appoint her.
Second.
Ready. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Howell?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth?
Aye.
And Supervisor Oakman?
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
Well, would you like to take a break, Wendy?
Just a brief, real quick one would be great.
Okay. We'll be back in 5 minutes-ish. Oh, yeah.